Welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast, Josue. Today we are talking about toothpaste, if I have to wrap it up like in one keyword. You're representing the e-commerce and global supply chain side of Colgate Palmolive, which is a super interesting brand when it comes to digital transformation and to earnings. We will come to that in a minute. But please introduce yourself and Colgate Palmolive so our listeners know what they are talking about or what we are talking about.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alex, for having me here. Yes. Josue Muñoz, originally from Colombia. I'm the head of global e-commerce for our global supply chain in Colgate Palmolive, a company that's been around the world for more than 200 years and with many, many brands, not only Colgate, our most important brand and our toothpaste around the world, but we also participate in categories of skin health, home care, pet nutrition. And so we have operations in more than 200 countries around the world. And of course, being around for more than 200 years, it is a constant evolution. And we have been traditionally a fast mover consumer goods company, always going and reaching our consumer through wholesalers, distributors, and retailers. But 10 years ago, we also got into the bandwagon of e-commerce. And so, working with all the digital commerce retailers and starting our own, direct-to-consumer operation and growing very fast, as this is one of the fastest growing retail environments in which we compete.
Yeah, so I just opened up the latest investor report because you're a listed company and it's very impressive number one in market share when it comes to toothpaste. Let's talk about this market first because it seems to be very interesting. I would guess none of our listeners can have a number in mind to describe the sheer size of this market. 17.4 billion in worldwide net sales. And the number I was impressed most by was 59 consecutive years of dividend increases, years, not quarters. So that is a tremendous success, especially at this kind of times we are in. Let's start maybe with the toothpaste market. I think that is like 40%+ of your revenue is in the toothpaste market. So how did it come? So how can you dominate this market?
Well, we as I said, 200 years around the world, expanding globally. So many regions of the world where we were the first toothpaste to be launched, and it's interesting. There's places around the world where the word for toothpaste is Colgate. So when somebody goes into a store and asks for a toothpaste, they don't say, give me a toothpaste, give me a Colgate, which provides us with a lot of strength. Of course, innovation, constant innovation, constant launching of new products, understanding of the consumer, tremendous amount of research and development to make sure that we are providing the best formulas that are geared to satisfying consumer needs. The best therapeutic toothpaste around the world. And so that is what allows us to maintain our leadership. We are the brand that is present in most homes around the world. So the penetration of Colgate is huge, and we strive to maintain that by constant innovation and constant understanding of consumer needs and satisfying those needs through our brand.
Yeah. So I think in the internet meme, industry, this kind of flossing thing became really a meme. So do you floss or are your teeth falling out? Do we have like reached the same standard when it comes to, teeth cleaning on a global level? So is it like a Western world phenomena or is it handled in different way in the Asia world?
Well, the brushing practices around the world are different, but I would say that everywhere around the world, people brush their teeth. The frequency of brushing your teeth is not at the level that it should be. You should brush your teeth 2 to 3 times a day. And we find many places of the world where this does not happen. And again, part of our what we do is education, a tremendous work around the world in educating children about oral health and brushing habits. and our Bright Smiles, Bright Futures program around the world does it. Going to schools in the most poor regions in Africa, Asia, and educating children to brush their teeth because it is important. And we know that good dental hygiene is an important component of overall health.
Yeah. And this is like, I would say it's a low involvement product like soap, which is another strong category you're active in. And, this was by tradition a product category which was 100%, depending on the wholesale, retail market. So you ship like big containers of, toothpaste and, or soap to Walmart or to other retailers, to Aldi or to Rewe in Germany. And then they sold it for you. As it is a low involvement product, and people really don't only differentiate like the product by the taste of the product. I would have expected that most of those retailers would have developed their own toothpaste brand to get back a bit of the margin you are earning. Was it something that happened over the last decades?
It
could have happened to a certain degree. Otherwise, you would have been out of business.
Well, private labels have a role across all of our categories, but there are categories in which changing consumption habits is very difficult, and toothpaste is one of those. So changing your toothpaste is not easy. The flavor, the mouthfeel that you're accustomed to and you like is something that you want to maintain. So once you get into the consumer and they start using your brand, switching is not easy. So that is an advantage that that toothpaste provides if you're able to acquire that consumer. In soaps, it is slightly different. So switching soaps is easier. But taste, mouthfeel is something that you get accustomed to and you get into a habit and it's difficult to switch. So that has given us in that category an advantage versus private labels. So the participation of private labels in the toothpaste category is not high, even though, as you know, they are present in many retailers.
And do you have in different regions different strong competitors? Because obviously I'm living in Germany, and I remember like a very strong campaign from a brand called Elmex.
Elmex is our brand too. We old Elmex and Meridol, yes.
Okay, that's good.
But I mean, absolutely.
I remember this kind of, there was like a huge advertising thing going, it must be like in the 90s or early 2000s, and there was like one toothpaste for the morning, one for the evening, so it was like kind of a different, which makes sense, obviously, from a hygiene perspective, but for me it felt like there must be different flavors, different brands per region. Is this true? Is there like a strong French toothpaste brand you're competing with, or is it different like in Japan, for example?
Yes, the flavors that people like are different, and so the formulas differ across the world, and so yes, we do have different formulations. The backbone and the technology behind the therapeutic benefits is the same and is consistent, and it's the best we have across the world, no matter where we sell. But the flavor and the mouthfeel can change because the tastes of consumers change around the world. So yes, we do have differences.
If I would have joined a CPG conference like 10 years ago, discussing direct to consumer, with brands like, Colgate, the universal answer would have been, ah, Alex, you know, it's a low involvement product. We are so happy. We have our partners, the drugstore partners, the retail partners. It does not make sense to send out like just a single toothpaste for like $2 and have all the packaging effort for $3. We would like to stay with our partners from the wholesale industry. Obviously, this changed a bit. Can you help us understanding what has changed in the market in the last?
What has not changed is the importance of our partners, and we continue to work with our partners because most of the brands that we sell are part of a grocery shopping trip. But of course, we understand that reaching the consumer directly, being able to have first-party data and getting closer to that consumer is important for us. So absolutely, we started having direct-to-consumer initiatives We even have created brands that go direct to consumer. We have products that have a higher price point and make a fulfillment directly to consumer feasible in place. And so that is something that we're rolling across the world. And so it is a balance. There's a portfolio that that goes to retailers and will continue to go to retailers. And even the e-retailers like the Amazon, the Ocados, the pure players around the world, the Chewy's, the Zooplus's. But we have developed a portfolio that allows us to go directly to consumer and so that we can have that first-party data and we can engage with them, understand their needs firsthand. And it's a business that it's growing, but it's still a small percentage of our overall business.
So I'm not wrong if I assume that like direct to consumer revenue share in your company is below 5%. So it's not like a major part of the business yet.
It is small, but it is growing very fast.
And then the first step into this direct to consumer business we have seen with other CPG brands, not by selling directly to consumers, but by handling Amazon operations, because Amazon kind of said, you know, we don't want to do the retailer's job anymore. We allow you now to upload your product photos and the text. You have to pay for it, obviously. You can even have like a special agent from the Amazon site, which you have to pay for like $200K a year. And this was kind of the first time, at least what I have observed with other CPG brands, that the manufacturers really needed to think about product data, product pictures. They had to think about better keywords, meta tags, titles, how to describe products, all the stuff that makes an Amazon A+ content looking much better. So this must have happened within the last like 5 to 6 years, also in your company, right?
Absolutely, and of course that forced us to relook at our organization, create the teams that are now making sure that all that information that you just described is accurate, perfect. It is uploaded to the e-retailers and maintained adequately. And of course, then around that, all the capabilities to be able to make sure that we are advertising correctly in those players so that our product is always in the first page. Because if you're not there, you will not get that click. So absolutely, created a structure, brought in people with the expertise to manage that, and making sure that our shares and those e-retailers are as strong as our shares through grocery historically. It has been a big change for us, and still learning, and it is always a challenge, and it's evolving very fast. And so the Amazons and the omni-channel players now, which also have created their own e-com branches, are forcing us to do things differently and refocusing our resources to make sure that that digital shelf is as good as our physical shelf has been historically.
Can you elaborate a bit on your direct-to-consumer brands or the experiments you have been running over the last years? I understand there's like a channel conflict. If you like try to sell directly your main toothpaste brands, that usually leads to channel conflict externally and internally, because you might have differently incentivized teams on that size. But you said already there are brands that have been specifically created for direct to consumer business. Can you?
Yeah. We create, for example, we have a brand that's called CO. It's a very hip brand, which has toothpaste, electric toothbrushes, which is only sold direct to consumer, and that we created. It doesn't go through retail yet, and so we created the brand specifically to be able to start to learn around direct-to-consumer and have a differentiated proposition so that there wouldn't be direct competition with the retailers. But again, if you look at history, there has always been an evolution of the retail environment, and somebody has come in with a different way of selling products. If you go 15, 20, 30 years ago when discounters, the Aldis of the world, came in, that was a huge impact on how we sold products. And that's when you get the traditional retailers saying, okay, so Are you going to sell to those people? It is the same conversation, but now with the digital players. And again, as a brand, we have to be present everywhere that somebody will shop us. And we have to do it in a way that we maintain strength across all the channels. And that is the challenge that we have had historically. And it's no different to the challenge that we have today with the development of e-commerce, just another retail environment that is evolving very fast. So how do we make sure we compete appropriately? How do we make sure that we are fair and equitable with all our players and that we provide the consumer the opportunity to shop wherever we decide and have access to our brands and buy them?
I usually repeat this in like many episodes of the Commerce Talks and podcast. There's like two main pillars of our thinking, or especially of my thinking, when it comes to e-commerce strategy. The companies that will be successful in the future will be the companies with direct customer access, and the companies those are winning, and the company that winning most are the ones that are moving the fastest. So really trying to bring all the new initiatives, all the ideas into reality. Test and learn, stop ideas that just don't work, excel ideas that work really good, maybe like the CO brand. This first main pillar, owning direct customer access, this is something I could find in the today Colgate strategy presentation, or is it not there yet?
It is there. And we're starting to do that, and that's part of the challenge we have. But as I said before, our category is still shopped in a grocery shopping occasion. So acquiring those consumers and going directly to them can happen in some of our categories and in some of our products, electric toothbrushes, whitening devices. Those are things that lend themselves to be very effective in a direct-to-consumer environment. But that others, it's going to be more difficult. So it is a balance of how do we acquire that first-party information? How do we leverage those categories, those products that work well there? And then with that information, make sure that we use it across all our channels, because the other channels are not going to go away. When you look at the developing world, it's still 40-50% is done through small mom and pops, changarros, sarisaris in Asia. So that is going to be around for a very, very long time. And so how do we take that knowledge? How do we make sure we use it across all channels so that our brands continue to be strong and our share continues to grow? And that is the balance, and that is what we're working and making sure we do successfully.
You just mentioned whitening devices. So in another podcast, this was discussed as one of the examples where the most scam is happening in the influencer industry. Though I don't know, there was like every other week, there was like a whitening device brand popping up, and many influencers like holding the camera and say, if you want to have like as white teeth as mine, please use this device. Obviously, quality and the way how it was sold was rather scammy. But it shows like how this kind of buying decision will be influenced in the future. So there's no alternative, from my point of view, for Colgate to play around with the same kind of marketing strategy. So in order to be successful on TikTok or Instagram or whatever channel is important in the region we are talking about, you must do it, right?
Absolutely, and we're doing it, And as you know, China's probably one of the most evolved e-commerce markets in the world. And there's where you see the tremendous power that influencers have in changing purchase decisions from the consumers. And so, of course, we work with influencers and we use all the mechanisms that are evolving, to reach the consumer and to change his buying decision. So, as you said, test and learn. This is totally new for us, and as you said, totally new for many of the fast moving consumer goods companies. But we have to learn. We have to try. We have to fail, and from those failures, learn and keep on moving. And that's what we're doing globally.
Okay, can you describe a bit what your team looks like? So how many people in Colgate are developing new D2C brands? Do we have like an e-commerce operation already? Is there a warehouse where you're really sending out merchandise to customers, or is it a third party doing this?
Yeah, remember that again. So very different levels of evolution of e-commerce around the world. And so how we are structured around the world differs based on the level of evolution of e-commerce. So we go from highly sophisticated e-commerce markets like China, now North America, in Europe, in some places growing fast, where we have dedicated teams around e-commerce, both from the commercial side and from the supply chain side, where we have segregated our supply chains. Because as you said before, historically, we have been a company that ships pallets and full trucks to retailers. Now we have to put units, do last mile fulfillment in many cases. And so that has forced us to create an alternative logistics structure that allows us to do that. And we do it in both ways. Again, it varies by market. We can do it ourselves, where we own our warehouse and manage directly the people that are doing the fulfillment. In other places, we do it with third parties that are specialized. And again, it depends on the size of the business. You have to reach a certain level and critical mass to be able to justify doing your own fulfillment. And until you reach that point, it is better to use a third party that does that for multiple brands and allows to share the fixed costs that a direct-to-consumer unit picking operation has. So it varies by country. What we have clear is that how do we select the third party to do that for us? How do we measure a third party that is doing that for us? And how do we make sure that the service that this third party provides is as good as if we were doing it ourselves? Because in the end, the fulfillment piece is absolutely critical for the consumer experience. So it is not how good is your website and how good and easy to use it is and how that experience is until you click the buy button, but also all the process until you receive the product, you open it. That experience is as important as the whole interaction with your website.
So let's maybe stay for a minute on the example of the CO brand, because I just opened the website. For the ones that are that don't know what the CO brand is, there is a couple of very interesting gadgets like the teeth whitening kit, the brushing kit, the CO to go. Kit. We have obviously some toothbrush refill stuff. So the initial kits are above like $100. So how long did it take in the Colgate organization to decide on such an experiment or such a thing? So from idea to go to market, what was it?
Years. Probably a couple of years at least from ideation to execution. If you look historically, it's fast for us. And so speed has become something that is critical for us. And especially in the e-commerce environment, you have to be able to test things fast. And that can mean a new product, a new presentation, a new package. And so our organization has adjusted so that we can do that faster. We can make volumes that are much, much smaller than what we used to do historically and do that efficiently so that if it doesn't work, we can just scrap and move on to the next one. And if it works, then we can scale up rapidly, increase the volumes, increase the profitability, and make it a big business. So that ability is something that we've had to put in place, and it's a key part of our strategy and of our supply chain strategy. Because being able to produce smaller volumes, being able to create a product and manufacture it much, much faster and in smaller quantities has been a change for us. And so we have segmented our supply chain. And we know that there are products that will be small volumes initially. If they're successful, there will be big volumes. If they're unsuccessful, scrap and move to the next one. So now we have the ability to segment our business, and we have created specific supply chains that are very, very good at doing that so that we can support the fast-moving e-commerce environment.
Yeah. So was there any hiccup like internally from like a cultural perspective? Because it's another thing we are observing a lot in CPG environments that it's very hard sometimes to convince decision makers to go this kind of direct to consumer step because they are so afraid of channel conflicts, which in many cases are the much bigger part of the project. It's 80% like internal explanation why you should do such a thing instead of focusing on the product. Was it the same with Colgate?
I don't think so. I think that our senior management, our CEO, is part of the message has been, look, we have to be faster, we have to be experimental, we have to empower people to be able to act. So that ability to move fast, push decision making down, has been critical in the change in our culture to be able to be fast. And so willing to experiment is something that he pushes and he lives that. So he allows for those things and he lets people make decisions and move ahead. Channel conflict has been around us for 200 years. So it was not new. If we had an issue with creating channel conflict, we wouldn't be able to have the market shares that we have today and be the company that we are today. So again, yeah, there were always has been channel conflict and we know how to manage it and we have the techniques and the tools to be able to manage it satisfactorily. So again, it's just, as I say, with the channel, but a lot of that we had already experimented in our 200 years of being around. And so we know how to manage it and we know how to do things so that everybody can compete and our consumer, which in the end is our goal, can buy that product wherever he decides to buy his groceries, his toothpaste, his soap, his pet food, and all the categories in which we compete.
The one other channel that I could think about is important from a sales perspective are the dentists, because sometimes when I was at a dentist, there was like a special recommendation for a product. Usually he's complaining about my flossing discipline, I would say. But is it also a channel you're focusing on, or are there special products on those channels?
Absolutely. Professional recommendation is important for us, not only across our oral care category, but across our skin health category and our pet nutrition category. And again, something that we've done historically very well, and it is absolutely key for us. How do we engage with the profession? How do we present the profession with why our product has benefits that others don't have? And how do we gain recommendation of the profession? It is a key competency that we maintain and we work with. So we have relationships across the world with veterinarians, with dermatologists, with statisticians, with odontologists, and it is a key element of our go-to-market and our marketing strategy, because professional recommendation is very important in many of the categories in which we compete.
The vet business is also important. So do I have to clean the teeth of my dog too? Is it?
No, we have a very big business with pets, Hills pet food, very 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 strong in Europe, very strong North America, growing across the globe, and a category that with the pandemic grew exponentially. And so yes, we have probably the best food for your pet, and I can tell it personally. My pet has always had Hills, and they live well and they live long.
Ah, okay, I didn't know that. So it's not food which is specialized on teeth cleaning.
No,
it is
Hills Science Diet and Hills Prescription Diet is our brand, and yes, it is a big business for us also. And very big in e-commerce. Pet food is a category that is better suited for e-commerce because you buy big bags of dog food or cat food, either cans or dry food. And so it is more of a destination category. And so people do go in and buy specific brands, especially because once you start feeding your pet with a brand, it is not easy for them to change because it affects their whole feeding habits and gastrointestinal development. Very big and important business for us. Also very big in e-com.
As vice president for global e-commerce, you're not only responsible for direct to consumer initiatives, but also for all the new e-commerce players. And pet food, obviously, it will be Chewy in the US, and in standard e-commerce, it's going to be Amazon. Oh, these are your partners. You have to navigate through your daily job. Is this correct?
That is correct. So yeah, my responsibility is a supply chain. So engaging with those customers and making sure that our supply chains are efficient is what my key objective is. So the teams around the world in the supply chain are focused in supporting the commercial teams. And of course, the Chewy's, the Zoo Pluses are as important in pet food business as Amazon is and as others are. And the rest of the category. The pure players in pet categories are very, very strong, and they're key partners of us globally.
Now we are moving in some parts of the world in a recession. Hopefully, it's not going to be a heavy and long lasting recession. And those regions, customers start saving money for the products they really need. From my understanding, most of the products you're selling, like soap, toothpaste, all the stuff around this, these are products they need, right? They would rather save some money on a travel or a new car than saving money on toothpaste. Is this correct? So obviously there will be an effect for everybody, but for your product categories, this kind of impact will be a little bit less, right?
Rest, the impact is less, but as I always say, if we reach a point in which people stop brushing your teeth, then we're in real trouble. So yes, people will continue to brush their teeth. People will continue to use soap. What we do see is that sometimes they change from the premium product to maybe the not so premium product as the economy gets tough and people have their budgets affected. But the category itself, in volume, usually sustains itself because people continue to brush their teeth and they continue with their habits. They continue to wash their bodies and their habits. They continue to feed their pets. And so those are categories that probably are the ones that are affected the last, on an economic turndown. But again, depending on how bad it gets, it could be affected as people trade down without losing the category.
And have you been experimenting around with other channels too? Though we have the wholesale channel, we have the online direct to consumer channel, but because you have such a wide assortment around the hygiene sector, I would assume you have experimented with pop-up stores, for example, because there are so many different things you could present at a train station, for example, just to put a new brand to the market, for example, or to help the people to toothbrush much better than they did. Have you done stuff like this?
We have better digitally, but not physically. So cardboard stores in marketplaces with that we've done where you have all the Colgate products in a single place. But physically, it's very difficult because as you say. Our products are not high value on an individual basis, and so making profitable a pop-up store makes it very difficult, even if we have multiple categories, and the level of penetration it would have is very small because the geographic coverage they would achieve is small. So I don't think we've done that, but on the digital space we have, and so in China. The Colgate store that's part of a marketplace, and people can go and see all the products digitally. That makes it viable, and the reach that you get through that is much higher than what you would get on a physical doing it physically. So virtually, yes, pop up stores. Physically, no, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not financially viable.
I know it's not your core area of expertise, but obviously I grew up in a world where most of the toothbrush brands I saw have been promoted via TV to me. I'm not so sure if this is somewhere communicated from Colgate, but How is the split looking like today? Is it like 40% influencers showing new toothpaste and whitening kit? It's still TV.
The investment in digital marketing has increased, and it continues to increase. So yeah, absolutely, there has been a shift out of traditional advertising mediums to the new mediums of advertising, because that's the way you reach the young consumer and the new consumer. So absolutely, there is a shift in strategy. There is more investment in the digital advertising methods, and that is happening around the world, because clearly we're seeing that people are watching less television and they're watching more their TikToks, their Instagrams, their YouTubes, and so you have to be present where the consumer is present, and of course that forces us to shift how we advertise, and that is happening all over the world.
One challenge CPG brands are seeing when it comes to this online advertising channels is that bigger platforms like Chewy and Amazon, like Zalando in the European markets, they start charging more and more money just to show up a product on the top spot. If you're like opening up a website today on Amazon, any category, doesn't matter. Could be headphone, could be toothbrush. So the things you see are paid. No, there's no organic ranking anymore. So I have to scroll down like quite a while until like find the first organic best rated product by the customers. This is usually a complaint I'm hearing a lot from CPG brands. And then I usually say, you know, that's the same game the brick and mortar retailers are playing. The brand that is like listed on top paid most. The same game. So what's your take on this?
I was going to say exactly that. Look, and as I said before, it is the same game in a different environment. So before, what was your advertising medium in a store? Your end of aisle? And have a look at the price of an end of aisle 20 years ago to a price of an end of aisle today. An island with a palette of your product. So that's the teams in the store and the advertising that happened in store. So that channel had its own advertising mediums that, of course, we paid for. And so in the digital world, it's exactly the same. What changes is the mechanism, but the process is the same. You need to advertise. You need to be there. You have to be on the top on the first page. So what is the right balance and how much are you willing to pay? Because, of course, in the end, everything has to be profitable. So same conversation, same analysis that you did in brick and mortar, you now do it on the digital shelf.
So I'm not so familiar with brick and mortar terms. End of aisle seems to be the most expensive place, correct?
It is expensive. We're one of the islands. When you walk in the store and you see all those patterns of products, you're not there for free.
So middle of aisle, lower shelf, that's the one that really cannot afford like...
In some cases, even that. If you want to be in the hot zone in the shelf, some charged for that. Others know you gained it based on your market share. But absolutely, it's the same concept, different mechanism.
Okay, and then a friend of mine, and maybe that's the last part of this podcast, a friend of mine explained to me that 99% of all the innovations from the dental industry when it comes to really like repairing teeth and all the stuff, not toothpaste, but really what's happening with your teeth at the professional dentists, that's coming out of Germany, because most of the literature is coming from here, most of the professors, most of the innovation is coming out of here. And as I'm not in a position where I can say that's wrong, I'm just searching for a second opinion. So can that be the case? Have you heard about this before?
Look, I know that there's important research and coming up, party out of Germany, and as I told you before, Gaba and Meridol are brands that have been very strong in Germany for many, many years and have been supportive with many, many years with the research that supports the backbone and the technology behind those brands, and that comes all from the Germanic region. So I'm sure. Do I know exactly what is coming out recently? No, but I do know that historically there has been research and the development of Helmex Meridol brands and the benefits that they bring in, the technology behind them came out of the Germanic region.
Got it. That was a sensational podcast, Josue. That was really enlightening me in some of this area. Now I know LNX is not a German brand, so the TV advertisements made it believe for me that it's a German brand. It's also part of your group. I hope you can look forward to another like 60 years of paying dividends. I'm pretty optimistic.
That is the objective.
And I tried to buy some of the products you were selling on the direct consumer channels. Thank you.
We should give them a try. They're great products and they're fun.